Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform with one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite.
Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stereo. netsuite.com/stereo.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So tax season may be over, but your issues with taxes may just be beginning. Don't forget, guys, the IRS can audit your taxes within the last 7 years. So if you have any issues or you think you may have issues with taxes, check out DefenseTax.com. That's DefenseTax.com. They can help you settle your IRS tax debt for a fraction of what you owe. They help remove interest charges and penalties, prevent or stop wage garnishments, remove tax liens, prevent and stop property seizures, and they can also prevent and stop bank levies. Defense Tax Group is a tax advocacy service dedicated to protecting individuals and businesses from the financial devastation that results from the IRS tax debt. And trust me, guys, there is nothing scarier than getting that letter in the mail from the IRS telling you that there is going to be an audit or that you have an issue with your taxes. An IRS tax problem not only affects your financial future, but can also jeopardize every area of your life. And that's not what any of us need, right? So check out DefenseTax.com or you can give them a call. 866-657-1040. That's 866-657-1040. Do you love coffee? And do you also like to support our veterans? Well, I've got an awesome place for you guys to go. It satisfies both. Go to killtheenemycoffee.com. That's right. KillTheEnemyCoffee.com. So what exactly is this? It's an active duty and veteran-owned small business. They're dedicated to bringing you this country's best-tasting coffee through hard work and long hours of perfecting blends. Guys, I don't just promote this just because I want to promote it. I've tried it. It's awesome. And the byproduct, an awesome feature of it is you get to support your veterans. It's a small business. And that's what this country was built on, is entrepreneurial spirit and being able to start your own business and supporting veterans that have defended our freedom to be able to do something like this. So check out killtheenemycoffee.com. And yes, they obviously have coffee, but there's also some really awesome mugs. They have a gladiator mug and a kill the enemy water bottle. Really, really high quality stuff, guys. Check them out. And by the way, the kill the enemy slogan, that means to conquer your demons. So check out KillTheEnemyCoffee.com. So conquer your demons one cup at a time.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
If you're easily offended, this may not be the show for you.
Whatever happened to the men being able to physically retaliate against the women in WWE? This is a fantasy environment.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, guys. Thank you for joining me. It is Thursday, May 23rd, 2019. and I want to welcome you guys to the show, and a really cool show today. I have a really good conversation with a co-host, a new co-host to the show, Anthony DeMarco, who is a wrestling fan about as long as I have been, a little over 20 years. And great conversation about the current product, what got him into wrestling. Always ask that question. I know I always ask that question because I'm always curious as to favorite memories of people that they have of wrestling's past. And of course, you know, what makes them stick here? What makes you continue to be a fan? Some of your favorite memories. And we get to that as well. And talk about the current product. We talk about Money in the Bank. We talk about the mistreatment of Samoa Joe, of Sami Zayn, the fall from grace of Braun Strowman, tons of stuff. And Brock Lesnar and what he's done in capturing the Money in the Bank briefcase, which nobody saw coming, let's be honest. So we cover that as well. Just a whole slew of things that, you know, our goal when we got into this show was to be able to go through the current product and go through Monday Night Raw, go through SmackDown, go through Money in the Bank pay-per-view. And while we did touch on that, it, you know, wrestling is one of those deals where it is so easy to just get off track in a thousand different ways and in a thousand different talking pieces. And we did do that. I mean, I think when I bring on new co-hosts, I don't have an agenda per se. I don't have a script. I don't, you know, write our promos and then have us recite them. I just have bullet points, and I'd like to get to all of my bullet points, but I think that it's a better listening experience for everybody if we just let the conversation flow naturally instead of try to force certain things and all of that. So that's my formula for bringing on co-hosts, and it will continue to be. So just so you guys know, it's, you know, I know we didn't touch on everything, but it's impossible to touch on everything because of just how much content WWE puts out every week. It's just not possible to discuss everything in detail. But if there's things you want me to discuss and bring up with co-hosts every week, definitely give me a shout on Twitter at the WWE podcast, because I want to make sure that you guys are getting what you want from me, of the topics you want me to hit, questions you want me to ask, things like that. So just so you guys know, too, I am in the rotation now of bringing on new co-hosts. As you've listened over the past few weeks, I've done that. I've done exactly that, bringing on different voices, different perspectives, different backgrounds, male, female, you name it. I'm trying to bring those people on, and you guys are giving me feedback on the co-hosts. So it's not just a single decision by me. I'm not the only decision maker. I'm not the sole decision maker. I want you guys to help me out, and you have been. So I've gotten DMs and tweets and mentions and all that of what you guys like and didn't like about the shows and all that kind of stuff. So I am carrying that into my decision of ultimately how I'm going to handle this co-host deal, because it's, I'll be honest, this is not easy. I think what I'm going to end up doing is selecting multiple co-hosts and either come on the show at the same time or have a rotating schedule, because it's so hard to just choose one person so far. I mean, everyone I've talked to has been really fun and great. I truly don't have like, oh, this person is the best. I really, everybody brings something different to the table, and it's going to be a difficult decision. So anyway, I've got a little bit of news about WWE podcast. And I tweeted this out earlier. I don't know if it was today, yesterday, which would have been Wednesday, that I, you know, recently the rankings of the WWE podcast actually went to 129 on the sports and rec side of the Apple podcasts rankings. So that's pretty effing cool. Like, thank you guys for making the show a success and making it what it is and what it's going to be. I did not expect that. I was just kind of like scrolling through the rankings. I'm like, oh, that'd be cool if, you know, I'm on here. And holy, you know what? I was on there. So cool deal. Thank you so much for making this show what it is. And again, this is just the beginning. I really believe that. This show is really starting to pick up some momentum. And I thank you guys for that. You know, I try to make this as authentic as possible. This is not a state-run radio show. In other words, like, this is not WWE instructing me to say whatever they want me to say. Like, I'm not affiliated with WWE in any capacity whatsoever. I'm an independent fan running the WWE podcast because this is about WWE. So I want to, from a legal standpoint, say that I have zero affiliation with WWE in any capacity, official capacity whatsoever. But again, guys, thank you so much for the success of the show. It's growing pretty quickly, and thank you. I think the addition of the co-hosts is helping out, on top of the fact that there are some other news coming down the line about the website, my website that is being revamped, and I'll have a new launch date for that as well, which I don't know yet. It's still under construction, and that will be, I think, a good place too, where it'll have some articles, it'll have the podcast, obviously, but a fresh new look, a much more updated look for 2019, and that's going to be coming your way too soon. So, all right, guys. Well, I know I don't get to everything about Money in the Bank. I know I don't get to everything about Raw and SmackDown this week. I'll just say this in general. I enjoyed this week of WWE. Bayley becoming SmackDown Women's Champion, I think, is a good thing in revitalizing her career. Didn't see that coming. So that's a plus too. And I know we didn't get to that in any of my discussions this week, but, maybe I'll get to more of that on Sunday, which I'm bringing on a new co-host on Sunday. So yeah, guys, I am keeping to my promise of bringing on new voices, and another one will be coming your way this Sunday, where, we'll discuss about the goings on of WWE, as well as maybe a little bit of nostalgia. That seems to be a nice little mix of past, present, and even the future. How about that? All right. So now let's just get to it. Let's get to Anthony DeMarco and myself discussing not just the current product, but everything in between. Enjoy. All right. Welcome back. And right now I have a guest that has never been on the show, but has been one that I'm really looking forward to speaking with. His name is Anthony DeMarco. And right now I'm going to let you guys get a listen to him, and I'm gonna let him introduce himself. And Anthony, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, man. Thanks for having me on. It's my pleasure.
Yeah, we've been trying to find a time back and forth for quite a while, and I'm excited we got a time that works for the both of us. And we were talking a little bit off of the record button being hit that you have a girlfriend that enjoys wrestling, and I have to say I am extremely jealous, because throughout my entire life of being a man that has watched wrestling since 1997, I have not yet found a girlfriend that goes, "Oh yeah, Monday Night Raw is on, let's watch it together." So that's a pretty cool deal that you've got that, and I would say hang on to her.
Yeah. She's a keeper for sure. I don't think I would ever find anyone as easygoing as she does, as she is rather.
And you also mentioned before we started speaking too that you've been watching wrestling since WrestleMania 2000, so 20 years that it has been since you began watching wrestling. So which is pretty damn cool that you started out with WrestleMania 2000, pretty high benchmark to start with. And like, so what got you into wrestling? I mean, you just started watching it around 5 years old. Was it your dad got you in? Like, how did you start watching WWE?
Well, yeah, like my parents were divorced, and I would go over to my dad's on the weekends, and he would be watching it, mostly just in the background. He wasn't like a huge fan or anything, but he would just have it on in the background, and I just fell in love with it. I was always a huge fan of The Rock, loved The Rock, still love The Rock, but it took off after WrestleMania 2000, so I caught like those later Attitude Era years. But as I got older, I kind of really grew up in the Ruthless Aggression era, like the whole Evolution days, Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar, main eventing Mania, WrestleMania 19. I remember watching that, like making sure my mom wouldn't hear me, that I was staying up past my bedtime. So yeah, that was kind of how I got into it. I kind of fell out of it for a bit around right when it went PG, around 2007, 2008. And just up until The Rock came back, and when The Rock came back in 2011, I kind of got right back into it. So save for a little three, four-year blip there in the middle, I've been watching it consistently for 20 years.
That's pretty cool. I mean, you started in an era that I think is overlooked at a lot of times. I mean, we all look at the Attitude Era as the gold standard of the good old days of wrestling. And while that's true to some degree, the Attitude, or the Ruthless Aggression Era rather, was, you know, no slouch. You had some really big names in there, had some really good matches, stables, as you mentioned, Evolution that was in there. And you also mentioned WrestleMania 19, which is one of my favorite WrestleManias, I guess, more of the fact that it's Stone Cold's last match that we saw. And you mentioned it was You had to, like, be quiet and make sure that you didn't let your mom know that you were watching it. And I remember those days, too, and trying to sneak out to school with the DX T-shirts and all the suggestive language that was on those shirts and, you know, getting looks from teachers and all that kind of stuff. And, so you grew up in quite an era that I think is, as I said, overshadowed by just the overall view of how people look at the Attitude Era. And so that's awesome. So before we get to the product of today, and we're going to look at Money in the Bank, I've got a lot of stuff to cover there, Raw and SmackDown, obviously, too. And, but before we get there, so like, what are some of the memories that you look back on and go, man, like, this is why I love watching wrestling. This is what keeps me being a fan. And it makes you even YouTube those moments again.
Well, I think to stay in the theme of wrestling in 19, my favorite moment ever, and I've showed my girlfriend this a bunch of times, and it's at the match of The Rock versus Stone Cold. And as you mentioned, it's Stone Cold's last match. And if The Rock was like full blown Hollywood heel there, he was actually just rounding out his full time run with WWE. And I love it when Earl Hebner hits that three count. Immediately, The Rock comes out of character. I don't know if you remember this, but like, you just see him break character and he leans over to Steve Austin and he starts like thanking him and saying like how great like their rivalry was. And it's actually referenced in Stone Cold's biopic where both guys talk about that. And The Rock leaves the ring and he like points to Stone Cold and gives him a salute halfway up the ramp. So that's the moment that sticks out biggest to me. I also loved WrestleMania 20, Benoit winning that world heavyweight title. I think one of the best WrestleMania main events ever, especially considering it's a triple threat, which usually isn't the best formula for it. But I there's a bunch of moments, but that Rock Austin moment at the end of 19, I think, is the best for me.
Yeah, I remember watching that too. Obviously, as viewers at the time, we had no idea that was Stone Cold's last match. I mean, it wasn't advertised, publicized. We didn't know until the days and weeks and months that followed that, yeah, that would be Stone Cold's last match. We didn't even know that he was admitted, or very few knew that he was admitted to a Seattle hospital the night before from dehydration and overdoing it with caffeine and energy drinks and everything else, and almost didn't even make that match. And I remember sitting there watching and looking at those two, and you knew that something was going on beyond what was going on in the storyline after that three count. And just as you said, The Rock set up. He had a quick conversation with Austin. We didn't know, obviously, until after what was said in that conversation. But it was, you know, when you go back and listen to the audio, too, with Jim Ross, he knew it was Austin's last match, too, but he couldn't say anything. However, when you listen to it, with the knowledge we know now, it's very obvious that Jim Ross was trying to put over Stone Cold as one of the best of all time. Basically, reading between the lines now, you knew that he was trying to tell us it was his last match without actually telling us. While the match I don't think was as good as their WrestleMania 17 match, it was still a moment of in time that one of the greatest of all time hung up their boots for the final time. With all that, I mean, I'm starting to get all nostalgic now. And as you said too, WrestleMania 20, I was there in Madison Square Garden when they had the triple threat with Benoit and Michaels and Triple H, and the crowd went nuts. I mean, and having Eddie Guerrero come out at the end, and they both celebrate, two guys that overachieved, but were the two of the greatest of all time, regardless of, and we're just going to throw away the Benoit tragedy. I mean, that we're taking that out of it. From a pure professional standpoint, Benoit and Guerrero were the top of their game, and to this day would hold up as in anybody's, I think, top 10 list that of the greatest of all time in terms of wrestling technician, understanding crowd psychology. Like, they both had it, they both understood it, and guys that were well below Vince McMahon's you gotta be this high height to ride this ride, which he seems to be, like, you know, he wants guys that are 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", and these two were, what, 5'10 at best? So, they were overachievers. I'll never forget that moment, and I loved it. So, you're bringing me back today.
Yeah, well, WrestleMania 20, I think, just save for the Goldberg-Lesnar, like, atrocity that it was, there, like, that whole card, top to bottom, I don't think there was one bad match. You know, they opened the show with the Cena win over Big Show, his first ever WrestleMania match, and he wins his first ever title. Then you had that crazy, like, cruiserweight gauntlet where Mysterio, I think, came out dressed as the Flash, I'm pretty sure. And then you had, like, the fatal four-way tag matches on Raw and SmackDown. Molly Holly got her head shaved. Evolution fighting Rock and Sock. It was just, oh, yeah, Taker comes back and gives new birth to the Dead Man character after being on a hiatus since Survivor Series when Kane buried him. Yeah, that WrestleMania, I would say, is top five for sure, if not higher.
It was, yes. And like you said, beyond the debacle that was Goldberg-Lesnar, and believe me, I remember the audio in that match, even listening to it today on the WWE Network or wherever, doesn't do justice to how badly the crowd just crapped all over that match. And the thing is, even this was before, you know, it was social media, the social media explosion. This is, yeah, you had the internet, but they were considered dirt sheets at the time still, and it was still kind of that underground society, at least that's how it was viewed. But it was pretty much public knowledge that Goldberg was leaving, his contract was up, Brock Lesnar was basically moving on to another sport in the NFL or attempting to. And you had Stone Cold there, who's the elder statesman and the respected elder statesman, ends up just stunning both of them, and it was beautiful. I mean, that was clearly the highlight of the match. It was just a garbage match, and it was destroyed by the crowd. But outside of that, you're right. That was a WrestleMania that I think is often overlooked as well, because we all think of WrestleMania 20. What's the first thing we think of beyond Benoit winning is the Goldberg-Lesnar match, which is just synonymous with WrestleMania 20 with so many people. But you're right. Yeah, you had Molly Holly getting her head shaved. It's Undertaker coming back as the Dead Man character from being the American Badass for, what, 3-4 years? Prior to that, he finally transitioned back to the character that we all know and love and faced Kane. Was it as good as a WrestleMania 14 match? I don't think so. I mean, but it was what it was, and it did what it needed to do. It was about The Undertaker coming back and reestablishing himself as the Dead Man, and Kane denying. I remember Kane standing there saying, "You're not real." Like he was continuing to be in denial, even as Undertaker stood before him. Paul Bearer, obviously, you know, he's not with us anymore, but Paul Bearer, that was the very first thing that we heard after the lights went out, that yes, like, and you heard that, and the crowd went crazy, and then obviously you had the gong and the whole deal. So yeah, WrestleMania 20, I think is a special one, and I think selfishly, since I was there in person, it doesn't hurt that experience either.
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, like you said, it was just great top to bottom. I still remember when the call by Jerry Lawler when Kane came out, and they had like that cool stage at the time. And I think that was my favorite part of the Ruthless Aggression era, is that every single pay-per-view had a different stage and a different ramp. Unlike now, where like it's the same stuff set for Raw and the same set for SmackDown, except take out the ramp and now it's SmackDown. And I remember Kane coming out and like the buildings in the back were on fire, and Jerry Lawler was just like, "Oh my God, JR, like New York's on fire." It was such a and I was a sucker for that commentary team too. They were just incredible.
It was. I mean, Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler, I mean, there is no better team. I don't think there ever have been or has been. They just are peanut butter and jelly. They just go together in a way that you can't teach, you can't manufacture, you can't plan. It just happens. And Jim Ross, I'm really excited, honestly, to hear him in AEW and how he does. Now, he's obviously not, I don't think, going to be as quick-witted as he was back in, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s. Father Time is not on his side, but I still think he has a lot to offer to AEW, and I'm excited to hear him. I know this is WWE podcast and all that, but at the same time, like I'm a wrestling fan through and through. Like I'm not blind to the other promotions out there, and one especially to the level of AEW, the hype that it's gotten, the excitement that they have garnered without even holding a single event yet is amazing. And we have Double or Nothing this weekend. They need to deliver in a big way, and I think they will, and they have some big names that are not just WWE throwaways or WWE guys that couldn't cut it, and we're just going to take the leftovers of what WWE didn't want. These are guys that I think are underutilized. The guys that did take from WWE, I think, have been underutilized, with Jon Moxley, a.k.a. Dean Ambrose, rumored to go there. CM Punk heavily rumored now to go there. I don't think he'll show up this weekend, but eventually he will make his way there. Jim Ross, Chris Jericho, Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, they got a pretty damn good roster for a promotion that hasn't held a single event.
Yeah, well, like they're no TNA. I think that's pretty clear, and they have a lot of money coming behind them, and having a guy like Jericho who has almost been kind of like an ambassador of such, and you know, it's already like they're trying to reignite the Monday Night War. I don't know if you caught that tweet that Y2J put out after Money in the Bank. Very satirical tweet about Lesnar, about all of Lesnar's the future of the biz, and what a great booking decision by WWE, and this is why WWE will still stay on top forever. And I just think this is going to be really, really interesting with AEW.
It is, and I don't honestly, like, people need to just relax, though. As much as I'm excited about AEW, I think most people are, I don't believe they're a true competition for WWE yet. We have no financials. We have no TV ratings. We have no merchandise sales. We have nothing yet. And I think that while we're all excited for an alternate version and presentation of professional wrestling beyond Vince McMahon's sometimes eye-rolling entertainment version of it, I think we need to just kind of take a step back. Let's see what they can do. And then maybe in a year, let's judge whether or not they are true competition for WWE. If the goal for them right now is let's put WWE out of business, I think they are kidding themselves at this point. If again, this is a conversation that I don't think we should have for another 10 years if they can put WWE out of business, which I think will never happen, and I hope never happens. Those of you that are wishing for WWE to go out of business or for WWE to put AEW out of business, I don't think are true wrestling fans, because if you love the product, you love it regardless of the presentation that it's presented in. And so I don't think – and the fact that it allows another place for guys and gals to go and work. It's their lifestyle. It's their lifeblood, rather. And this is how they make their living and earn their money. So anytime there's more competition, it usually creates a better product because it puts pressure on your opposing promotion to create a better product so that you can – increase TV ratings, you can increase attendance. All of it is a win-win for the consumer. So I think that anybody that is discounting that needs to take a look at themselves and evaluate whether you're a real wrestling fan or not.
Yeah, of course. Like I think a lot, especially like this internet age, it's like it's the cool thing to like hate on wrestling, you know? And like everyone just hates everything about the product, and no matter how good they do, people just crap all over it. And you know, like, when I listen to your show, like, a lot, like, I hear you criticize it, but that doesn't mean that you want them to go away and go bankrupt and not exist. You just want the best possible product because you love it, and that's why I love it. There's some times where, like, it's eye-rolling almost. Like, we'll get to some things on Monday Night Raw that I found very eye-rolling. But the last thing I want is for it to go away. As I mentioned, it's been a huge part of my life for 20 years, and I don't care how it's presented. I'll love it till the day I die. Mm-hmm. I think you've said that numerous times. Just like it's one of those things that once you're hooked, it never truly goes away from you.
Never. It very rarely are you a fan that is a longtime fan that goes away and never comes back. It's like a drug that you just it really kind of is like sometimes you don't like it, it doesn't, you know, give you that high that you're always looking for, but you always come back because you know eventually you're going to get that feeling again that like, oh, this is why I watch this. And I think that's what it is. It's unlike any other form of entertainment out there because it's there's no breaks, there's no off seasons as they like to tell us, and there's not. And we may critique the product at times, and I do too, and sometimes to the point where I probably shouldn't focus a lot on their negative, but sometimes they give you such a garbage show that I'm not gonna come to the defense of WWE when they don't deserve it. And I love the product, you love the product, and when I see room for improvement, that's the purpose of it, rather than just having a bitch and moan session that maybe I'll get some more clicks if I have a racier or questionable rant. Maybe people that's not the purpose of it. So yeah, you're exactly right. So let's transition into the current product because we're starting to get lost already. This is how crazy wrestling is. So you mentioned Brock Lesnar earlier, and I think that's a good place to start because, yeah, there are definitely other places we can go to, but I want to start with Brock Lesnar, and your overall thoughts on him winning the Money in the Bank ladder match and becoming the Beast in the Bank, and obviously the subsequent shows on Raw and Paul Heyman showing up on SmackDown?
Well, you know, I actually kind of like it. I'm not going to lie. I know, like, as soon as I heard Brock's music hit, it's weird. Like, my first reaction wasn't, oh, my God, Brock's going out. My first reaction was, man, people are going to be pissed. That's literally what it was. And, like, my girlfriend loves Brock, so she popped hard. She marked out. And I don't know. I like it. I think, obviously, it would have been cooler if Brock was just the surprise entrant from the beginning. And then, but we all know that Brock's not going to be in a ladder match. I don't think he's ever been in a ladder match before Sunday. But I don't know. It's something new. It's something different. It's not just like, okay, like who's like an up and comer who's going to get the briefcase and try and go for his or her first or second ever like world title. It's a well established guy. And I think it's going to add a lot of suspense to the shows. Now we're going to get Brock for a second consecutive week next Monday. I don't know. I really liked it. I thought it was different. I thought they caught everyone off guard, and I'm really okay with it, to be honest.
I'm in the same boat as you, and I know people are saying, oh, he didn't do anything. He just came out at the end when everyone else, you know, threw their bodies against the steel and everyone's bruised, banged up. And I said this on Twitter, and I'll repeat it. Isn't this the point? We're not supposed to like Brock Lesnar. If he's the heel, why wouldn't you wait until the very last moment where everybody has destroyed themselves and you can basically come up, walk in, take the briefcase and walk out without having to go through all of that pain? I mean, you're the heel. That's what you do. The only part I didn't like, and this isn't even about Brock Lesnar, this is about the booking, and this is something that is, I think, a cardinal sin that WWE does from time to time, is number one, they have athletes who suddenly, who are world-class athletes, forget to know how to climb a ladder quickly, who can jump from the top rope at a moment's notice in the blink of an eye, but boy, they can't put one foot in front of the other to climb a ladder. I mean, they just forget how to do it. Number two is the fact that anytime you have a babyface who's on top of the ladder and is about to grab that briefcase and somebody's music hits. It was, in this case, it was Ali. He had probably, what, 5, 6, maybe 10 seconds to grab that briefcase instead of standing there dumbfounded that, oh, my God, I hear Brock Lesnar's music. Grab the briefcase and get the hell out of there. I mean, like, yeah, it just those little things. I mean, I'm not complaining about the segment in general because I like Brock Lesnar, at least from the booking of what WWE has done with him getting the briefcase. But it's just those little things, like, come on, like he's standing there with his jaw open, but he's got the briefcase in his hand. Grab it and go. I mean, so those little things, but you are totally right. I mean, Brock Lesnar, when I heard his music hit him, I thought about that same thing, and I like Brock Lesnar. I like that because, number one, he's legitimate. He brings legitimate credentials to the WWE. Am I a little bit tired of his act coming out, standing there, being just making faces while Paul Heyman cuts a promo? A little bit. As good as Paul Heyman is, it's been the same formula since he returned in, what, 2012 against John Cena. It's been like, okay, we've seen this song and dance. Like, can we get something different? Can just something? I mean, maybe having a match on Raw every, you know, few months even. Something needs to change a little bit with Brock's character so that, quote, go away heat goes away. But ultimately, that's the purpose.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Guys, that's what you're supposed to be feeling is pissed off. So I liked it.
Yeah, that's it. I felt sometimes, too, that maybe like a Brock thing could like a change in his character would be good. Like, I remember a few years ago, like, they teased like a feud with the Wyatt family. And it was like, oh, you know what, that'd be cool, like, Brock kind of, like, not as a good guy, per se, but maybe, like, an anti-hero. But, I liked it all in all. I think it's kind of, even though I despise the wild card rule, I think it's kind of cool that, like, it leaves the opening for him to jump to SmackDown. But in saying that, I don't think they need a wild card rule for that. I think it would actually be almost better if you wouldn't have never come into contact with Kofi. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Because if he would have never come into contact with Kofi and then just showed up on SmackDown to cash in, like Edge did on Undertaker all those years ago, and I think it would have added to it. But no, I like Brock having the belt, the briefcase. It's something different, and I'm really anxious to see where they go with it.
I am too. I mean, I guess that Paul Heyman said that he's going to reveal who Brock's going to be cashing in on this coming Monday night. And you know, I don't really know if I have a preference. I would assume that it's going to be Seth Rollins. But, you know, I mean, if it's Kofi, I have a feeling that he could take that belt off Kofi in a very quick fashion. And then you have Brock Lesnar holding the WWE Championship hostage. But Brock needs to change something in his look, what he does when he comes out there, other than just standing there making kind of awkward faces at times. He needs something more, and I don't know what exactly that is. Yeah, I mean, him holding the briefcase, I like it. It adds a little bit of intrigue. As you said, the wild card rule, honestly, why even bother with a separated brands at this point? WWE has crossed over people inexplicably every couple of months. I mean, you have people just come out on Raw and SmackDown. Look at the main event of Raw before WrestleMania. It was Rey Mysterio versus Baron Corbin. What the hell is Rey Mysterio doing on Raw when he wasn't drafted there? I mean, there was just things like that that it's like, well, so what are they doing here? Why was Michael Cole interviewing Becky Lynch in Charlotte a number of weeks ago before the wild card rule is implemented? You're a Raw guy. Like, things like that. It's like, what are you doing here? And then Vince McMahon implements this four-person rule only. Well, I've counted, and there have been more than four a number of weeks already. This four only makes no sense. And how do you if I'm a superstar from SmackDown, I want to go to Raw next week. So how do I do this? Is it first come, first serve? Do I have to talk to my general manager? Like, I just want to know the details. Like, how does this work? Just first four guys, first four girls show up? I mean, I don't know. So yeah, I mean, I could go on a rant about the wild card rule, and I know why they're doing it. It's very simple. People think it's a knee jerk reaction to the terrible ratings. I think it's partly that, but it's also the fact that they have a massive Fox deal that they want to placate to and make sure that the ratings for that show don't go basically through the basement, which they have, and they're trying to tamper that by allowing the top stars from Raw and SmackDown to just show up whenever they want.
Well, yeah, and I agree with that. Like, and I guess it's to add some intrigue and unpredictability, but it's not even unpredictability. My girlfriend literally said on Raw, she's just like, I think Roman Reigns has used the wild card rule every single week. Not this week, but last week, Raw started with Roman in the ring, and then Miz came out, and then they got ambushed by Shane McMahon and one of his huge cronies or henchmen. And then on SmackDown, it was the same thing, but reversed. That Miz was in the ring first, and then Roman came out, and then Shane came out. And I just, you know, maybe I could get behind it if it was truly adding some difference and like different storylines and unpredictability, but it just seems like they're using it to always do the same thing. Like, okay, Lars Sullivan is going to come out, who I love, by the way. I really like Lars Sullivan. I think he has a lot of potential, but that's not a guy that I think should be using the wild card to just come out and destroy the Lucha House Party. Or why is Roman coming out to have beef with Shane McMahon when we know we're just going to get that on SmackDown? So the whole premise, okay, maybe it's not so bad, but just the way they're utilizing it is just so brutal.
It is, because they just don't care about detail. Like, that's the problem in general with WWE, and Vince McMahon is, oh, nobody remembers what we did last week. I mean, the fans that do and the fans that care, I think most care about detail and congruity. And you're right. Like, Roman Reigns has sucked up the majority of the wild card rule, if not every single week since it's been implemented, a few weeks now? And so, like, why does he get to do that? What about somebody else that wants a chance? Is it a lottery? Like, again, how is this chosen? Who is chosen for what reasons? You just show up and the first person in the door? Is it like musical chairs? I mean, I don't know. Like, tell me. I mean, I just want to be told just a small detail of how this all works, but I don't think we're never going to get that. Just like we never got the explanation of why Charlotte was awarded a SmackDown Women's Championship match against Asuka the week before WrestleMania. Why? I mean, just give me anything. Maybe they bumped into each other backstage and or somebody shoved another person. I mean, give me anything, and they gave us nothing. That's some of the things that I just – in storytelling, it's like missing a chapter of a book. You can't do it and enjoy yourself reading the book. And so – but again, I love WWE. I promise. Like, I promise I do. All right, so let's continue to move on here. I think the second topic here, I mean, although this is very subjective, I'm just going based on what most people are talking about on social media, this 24/7 belt that Mick Foley introduced. I'm going to give my quick thoughts on it, and I'll toss to you. Okay, so I have mixed feelings on this. Beyond the look of the belt, because people are just absolutely destroying this belt that it looks like it was bought from Toys R Us on a Black Friday and all that stuff. I mean, I've heard it all. And so beyond the look of the belt, I don't really care so much about that. The premise about it is basically a PG version of the hardcore title. And we have Mick Foley out there, a living legend in wrestling, and basically dying in front of the Albany crowd, my hometown, which I actually did not attend because I couldn't, unfortunately, on Monday night. But the Albany crowd didn't really help him through that segment, but what were they supposed to cheer for? Like, how did you expect them to react to yet another championship in WWE? I understand that this is not a championship you're supposed to take really seriously, and it's just supposed to add a entertainment factor to WWE rather than having the serious belts like the United States Championship, the Universal Championship, and so on. You have this alternate belt that doesn't mean a whole lot because everybody in the world is eligible for it at any time. And name a sport in which any team at any time can compete for a championship. It just doesn't exist. Now, so that's the downside of it. The positive, because you always got to balance it out here, is that I think that it could, in the short term, create a entertaining television to a point if they do it right. Like, they could come up with some wacky scenarios of people sleeping in hotel rooms and somebody grabs a referee and, like, they just like sneak into someone's room and cover them while they're sleeping, and a referee counts to three and they're the champion. They could have a woman compete for this championship. They could do some things that you would be like, okay, that's funny or that's clever. But the problem is that I think this could get old real quick, and this title isn't really meant to mean a whole lot. So there's that too. So there's my positives and negatives. What do you think about it?
Well, you know, when they introduced it, it's exactly what you said. I said, oh, well, here's a PG version of the hardcore title. That's what it is. And, you know, like, look at the guys who run out to get it. Like, half those guys haven't been on television since before WrestleMania. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is I think you brought it up. There's already so many titles. Like, the United States Championship is, like, lost in obscurity. The Iconics have barely been on television since they won their titles. I think it's just a kind of a cheap way to get ratings. Another thing of, oh, let's leave them cliffhanging, like how R-Truth drove off on Monday Night Raw. And yeah, I agree that maybe that there's a possibility to go some positive route with it, like some wacky scenarios, as you mentioned, of how it could change hands. But, No, I have a hard time to find any positive in this. I really don't like it. I think it's just a really cheap way to try and get people intrigued. And for longtime fans like me, like, I remember what the hardcore title was. Don't try and redo it in a PG way. The only reason why the 24/7 hardcore title was fun was because it was hardcore. I don't even know how this one is going to be, how it's going to work PG. Yeah, it's not for me. I have a tough time with it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I totally understand your feeling on this. I mean, I guess when they said, well, when Mick Foley said this is false count anywhere, well, that already implies that no rules are in place. I mean, false count anywhere automatically implies that it's weapons can be used. I mean, so it's a hardcore title without saying hardcore. It's just Falls Count Anywhere. That's a softer way to say it. So, and I see where you're coming from because, yeah, they have enough titles as it is, but I think that this title is not meant to be a serious title, so they're thinking, well, we're not really adding a championship that is supposed to mean something. But the problem is, by utilizing this title beyond the entertainment value and the wacky, zany things that they could do with this over the next few months, is that you are overall devaluing the sport of professional wrestling. Yes, guys, I said sport. Kill me. This is what you could view as really a eye-rolling championship that when it starts to go down the tubes, once the bloom is off the rose and people stop getting entertained by all the wacky things that they could do with it, I think you're going to have people, and even now, those of you that dislike the concept, view this as a shot to professional wrestling because it's just so out there and just so not believable. And sometimes it's probably going to be very childish at times and just like, come on. Like it's not going to be a situation where it's so bad that it's good. It's just going to be so bad that it's bad. And I could see that happening with some of the things that they do with the championship. Now, again, the silver lining, because I'm trying to find one, is that I think R-Truth is a good scapegoat for this championship because he's already a character that you don't take seriously to begin with. So if he has a character you don't take serious to begin with, and he's holding a championship you don't take serious to begin with, but he's kind of funny, he's entertaining, you know, he has some cool catchphrases, and he gets a crowd reaction, well, he's kind of the guy you want to hold on to a championship like that.
Yeah, I think R-Truth is a good and logical person to carry it on for that reason. And, you know, he had that U.S. title run for a bit, but for the most part over the last few years, he's been somewhat irrelevant. So he's a good worker. I do like his character. So it's a way to kind of like make a lot of these guys who get lost in the shovel relevant. So from that perspective, I think it's cool. I think it's also kind of cool like how it could transfer to NXT as well. It's brand fluctuant, but as we mentioned, I think everyone can swap brands at this point. But it definitely has potential, but I think it's going to get old fast. And you just see how many segments it took up in Raw and SmackDown. Like I felt like just in SmackDown, it took up almost a third of the show of everyone chasing R-Truth around, interrupting a match. Like, yeah, I just hope they don't overuse it. That's all I'm saying. I just hope that Vince doesn't like go to it so often, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, he has a record of doing that. When he finds something that works, he beats it to death. And this could be one of those things that he finds that, oh, this is getting a reaction or people are reacting to it. Let's keep going with it. And it's not a situation of more is better. There is a law of diminishing returns, and it's very short with this championship. So I would use it sparingly. I would not do multiple changes every single night. I would have a, quote, long-term champion with this. And when I say long-term, maybe a few weeks to a month could be considered long-term with this belt, where when it is a change that, okay, it's not a belt we really care about, but at least we're paying attention to who's the champion now. And, you know, it just would add a very small bit of credibility to this championship. This could be a complete disaster, but I think that it, in the short term, will at least be tolerable and slightly entertaining. And as the weeks and months go on, it's kind of be kind of like, oh, okay, well, who's going to get this belt? Like, I mean, honestly, who cares? We're probably going to brush it off in a few months and be like, oh yeah, who's the 24/7 champion? I don't even remember. I mean, it's probably going to get to that point, but I'm going to try to enjoy it while I can and pretend that I'm in 1998 with the hardcore championship in the rotation. So let's get to Ziggler. Dolph Ziggler returns to SmackDown this past Tuesday, and I didn't see this coming. I really didn't, although I don't go hunting for spoilers online, so I like to be surprised. I didn't see this coming, so before I give my outlook on it, what did you think?
Well, I liked it. I was happy to see Ziggler back. He's one of the best in-ring workers there, and I liked this new kind of character that he kind of brought out, like this bitterness, almost like bordering on psychopath. You know, like, his acting was second to none there. Like, he was almost crying, tearing up. And I think that it's going to be a great match. I don't think anyone could deny that. But I think just in respect of having him back, And I feel like one thing about Dolph over the past few years is that he got really stale. He kind of became the same old character and then like the no theme song type of thing. But this is like completely out of left field. So I liked it. I'm just kind of worried that it's going to be rushed and it's going to culminate at Super Showdown, because I think Dolph really put his all into it. And I just hope that it's not like a, you know, a one and done thing. And then he loses to Kofi at Super Showdown, because I wasn't expecting him to give his explanation that same night. How often does that happen? Usually they wait. Yeah, exactly. Like usually like they wait and like they drag it out to the next week. But like, I think it was like maybe a segment apart that he brutally assaulted him. And then he gave his explanation. So aside from the fact that I'm worried that it's rushed, I really liked it.
Yeah, when he went out and gave his explanation, as you said, I was like, wait, we're actually going to get one? I thought for sure when he was being interviewed, and I can't remember the name of the woman who interviewed him, she might be new, she said, you know, or he said, you know what, that's a question that deserves an honest answer. And I'm like, and I was expecting him, his next line to be, but they don't deserve one. I mean, like, I thought he was just going to say basically nothing and saying we don't deserve an answer, or when he came out there that he was just going to put the microphone down and walk out and not give us one, which was supposed to give him more heel heat. But the fact is he gave us an explanation that makes total sense, and he was getting stale. You mentioned that he was. I like the fact that he didn't scream through his whole promo like he was starting to do when he was in the program with The Miz. He was more real. I think it came, his explanation, I really believe, and this is a great job on Ziggler's part, that it was coming from a place of real feelings for him. That, yeah, Kofi Kingston was doing what he believes he should have been doing, not Kofi. So it came from a place of jealousy and also a place of anger and resentment that, hey, no, that's not your spot. That's my spot that you're in. This should have been me. And like you said, he was tearing up. That was I was buying into it. Like, I got lost in his promo. And so kudos to Dolph Ziggler, who brought me in a place that I didn't think I was going to be brought into. And I'm glad we got an explanation rather than just lazy booking of, no, you don't deserve an explanation, I'm not going to give you one. I liked the reasoning behind it. It makes me care about now his motives. Why did he do what he do other than just, oh, you don't deserve one? Well, that's very shallow. So I'm glad we got it, and it was very believable.
Yeah, exactly. And it was different because Dolph lately, like even when he came to Raw last year with Drew, like he was just very like, oh, I'm better than you, I'm the best worker here. And it just became very repetitive. So I liked it. It was very real. And it made sense, like you mentioned. Like, wow, like Dolph very could have easily gotten that storyline. Watching Dolph go over on Daniel Bryan would have made a lot of sense at WrestleMania. So it's just very realistic. And I hope that they stretch this out a bit. Because I am kind of disappointed that they ended the feud with Kevin Owens so quickly, because I'm a huge KO fan, and I just hope that they don't do the same with Dolph. But another thing is, I don't understand why he assaults the champion and then is warranted a championship match a week and a half later, or 2 weeks later. That's what I don't understand. Why couldn't Kofi come out in a full-blown babyface promo next week and say, well, you know what? Like, I'm mad enough to tell you that I'll fight you face to face at Super Showdown, and then Dolph gets his sneaky way of getting in to a championship match, but he just comes out and proclaims that he's getting a championship shot. I don't understand.
Yep, that was the point I was going to bring up too, and I'm glad you did. I think he was supposed to probably not say that. That he was supposed to probably say, like, I want to face you at Super Showdown, not just all of a sudden proclaiming that he's going to beat him for the championship at Super Showdown. It's like, well, wait a minute. You didn't even issue a challenge. Kofi didn't accept. Nothing's in writing. Like, it's just like, wait, what? Even the announcers kind of covered for him, and they said that he laid down the challenge. But that's not the words that Dolph Ziggler said. So I think he probably got a little bit of his words mixed up there. But beyond that, yeah, like, so what are the qualifications for getting a championship match? You just got to come out and randomly assault the champion, and that'll award you a championship match. I mean, how many times over the years, though? I mean, this is not just exclusive to Kofi and Dolph. This is exclusive. This is just a wide range of times over the years that all you have to do is just randomly come out and assault a champion, and that'll get him mad enough to give you a championship match. You don't have to actually earn it. You don't have to go through a tournament. You don't have to, you know, kiss the general manager's backside. All you have to do is just go out there and just assault a champion, or attempt to assault a champion, whatever its champion that may be, and that will automatically qualify you. To me, I mean, that should actually disqualify you in the real sense. I understand this is professional wrestling, but like logically, that should not qualify you for anything because you're trying to jump the line. So that kind of stuff, I'm totally on board with that.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, I think how good of a promo Dolph cut saved it from that perspective, because if Dolph would have come out and said, oh, you guys don't deserve an answer, I'm just the best, and that's why I did it, and Kofi doesn't deserve it, I probably wouldn't have been behind this, just because, as we just talked about, it doesn't make sense. But because of how well he cut that promo and how real it felt and how original it was, really saved it. And now my intrigue is up for this. So kudos to Dolph for making it work. But like, it's almost kind of like, oh, well, we need a really good in-ring match for Super Showdown, so let's just bring back Dolph, who always puts on a good match, and Kofi, who always puts on a good match, and throw them together. That's why I'm just hoping, just based on how good Dolph looked in that promo, I'm hoping that it's not just a quick one and out and a quick fix to put on a good in-ring match for Super Showdown.
I'm with you. The fact that, well, Dolph Ziggler did. He saved the whole segment and the whole logic behind it, regardless of the fact that there wasn't any, by how good his promo was. Might have been the best promo he's had in a couple of years. I mean, it was very, very good, because it felt like a real person speaking to me and not a character of wrestling speaking to me. Always a good thing. And to your point a couple of minutes ago about Kevin Owens being suddenly just taken out of this the equation of the WWE Championship picture, him losing clean to Kofi Kingston and then subsequently the next SmackDown 2 nights later, coming out, not saying anything, dropping the mic and walking back. I think that, and this is just my hunch, that WWE management is giving him a bit of a slap on the wrist, or punishment, if you will, for not going to Saudi Arabia and refusing to go. Which is the general thinking out there, is that they are punishing him for not going to the Saudi Arabia show. Or, as WWE likes to say, just Jedi. They don't mention the country. Jedi could be anywhere. It could be anywhere. It could be in Georgia. It could be in New York. It could be in, I don't know, Florida. It doesn't matter. It's just not in Saudi Arabia. They'll just give you the city. And I can't wait till they get to the event to see, you know, exactly where they say they are. I mean, it's just amazing that they are completely avoiding the fact of publicizing where they're going for the Super Showdown. But nonetheless, I'm a huge fan of Kevin Owens too, and I think that he really could be a hell of a heel champion if given the opportunity. Yeah, he had that run with the Universal Championship until he got that taken off of him by, well, I think it was Goldberg who finally beat him for it. And
yeah,
so
Fastlane.
Yeah, and so I think that Kevin Owens, just like Samoa Joe, needs that.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Long-standing heel run as a champion.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought up Samoa Joe, because I remember you, on a couple of your older podcasts, you had these takes on how Bray Wyatt, how his whole like backstage segments, and I'm talking about his old character here, mm-hmm. where you said like it got old, how you'd come in with the light hanging down or the lantern and you'd say some really cryptic stuff and then you'd lose. I feel like Samoa Joe is the same thing. He always says he's going to destroy this guy and destroy that guy and put him to sleep. And he loses every big feud he has. And that's no slight on him. But I just don't understand why they couldn't have just given him this long run with the United States Championship, and why he had to just be like pinned in a way that, I don't know if it was a referee botch or if it was a way to maybe protect him and it was scripted. But I just feel like they have all these promising young guys, and then they just bury them with just empty promises on their side.
As Samoa Joe, I mean, yeah, like, and I stand by it with the whole Bray Wyatt deal. Like, he'd just come out and speak in riddles, and we're all supposed to sit there with our decoders and think about what he said. I don't, you know, and I'll take this phrase from Jim Ross. Like, he says, I don't want to be told how to make the watch, just tell me the time. And that's true. Like, I don't want to have to think a whole lot when I'm watching wrestling. I just want to be able to enjoy it and follow it without having a ton of thought going into it. And we'll get to Bray Wyatt in a moment too, but sticking with Samoa Joe, I think that they're doing such a disservice to this guy by having him. Yeah, he finally gets the championship at WrestleMania, and I've said this before in a couple of shows that I'm like, all right, they're gonna put the jetpack behind him, put the machine behind him, they're gonna have him go on a monster run as the United States champion. And what did he do? He comes out and talks a good game, but he ends up getting the loss and the loss and the loss and roll up losses and roll up losses. But and you draw a parallel between Bray and Samoa Joe with their promo work, but the difference is with Samoa Joe is he's really believable. Like, he could lose one week and come out the next and still make you believe, like, okay, well, he lost, but he found something. This time he really believes it and he's going to win. Whereas Bray Wyatt was just kind of like, you could honestly just have him cut one promo and repeat it every week in a different order, and it would feel like, oh, well, this is just Bray Wyatt again. Like, because I honestly don't know one thing he said. I mean, it was just very repetitive, whereas Samoa Joe was way more believable and engaging. And I believe in Samoa Joe, and he's got that ability, even after a loss, to make you still hate him, despise him, and want to see him lose again. But they are really, really wasting some good years with Samoa Joe by not letting him just go on a tear and bulldoze the entire roster. I mean, I don't know what they're doing or what they're waiting for. This guy is not, you know, a dime a dozen. This guy is one that you just don't see come along that often. With the mileage he's got on his body, with how old he is, but how much experience he has, they are going to look back and be like, hey, why didn't we maximize Samoa Joe when we could have?
Yeah, I don't get it. Like, the guy has done every possible service he can so far in his short time with WWE. Every storyline he's put in, he's given it his all, and he, like you said, his promos are so believable. He's good in the ring, especially for his size, and it's like they're always knocking on the door. You know, he had that really good program with Brock a few years ago, then last year he had that lengthy one with AJ. But it's kind of like he goes in these high profile feuds, and then as soon as it's done, like, he disappears, and then he'll resurface. Okay, now they put the U.S. title on him. You think he's going to go on a monster heel run, but to be honest, besides the title defense he had against Rey at WrestleMania, I don't know one win he actually had when he had that belt on him. And it just decredits his character, and yeah, I don't know why that they're not striking while the iron's hot with Joe. Like you said, he's not exactly young. He did a lot of years in TNA, and I just feel like the longer they make this go on, the worse it's going to get, and they're just running out of time with him.
Yeah, they are. And the fact, time's not on his side. I don't know when his contract is up, but I could see him being one of the candidates and advocating to go to AEW, where, you know, he could be maximized, and the management there would recognize his ability and his potential. But again, I don't know his contract length and so forth, but it just makes no sense. He is one of the most, if not the most believable heel on the roster. He just is that good. His music is great. His demeanor, his look, there's nothing about him that I can see through. Like, I don't look at him and go, ah, he's a guy just playing a wrestler. Like, he looks like a guy that could kick somebody, kick their teeth down their throat, and I would be legitimately afraid to get in a scruff with this guy. Like, I wouldn't want to be in a dark alley with him. Of course I know he's actually, he's a legitimately nice guy from what I hear, but his on-air character, you can't see through it. You can't see through his work. You can't see through his promos. He just has so much knowledge and experience in his belt that it's being wasted in these start stop. You know, you're a champion, but you're going to lose every single week after that. So it's going to decredit your entire run. It's just bizarre stuff that they're doing with him, and he must be so just frustrated creatively. I mean, I know I am, because I just I don't want to lose faith in the character, but I'm starting to because of the fact that management is destroying his booking, just as Dolph Ziggler was kind of in the same boat for years when we thought, oh, they're finally going to push Ziggler after he won and cashed in his Money in the Bank, the Raw after WrestleMania a number of years ago. And all he was a transitional champion. And so I kind of feel like it's start, stop, 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 to the point where it's going to get to the point where fans are just like, I don't even care what happens anymore. I mean, same thing with Bayley and Sasha, and they destroyed both of their characters by doing that same thing. So I just hope that Samoa Joe isn't the latest victim of that booking.
Well, yeah, and you see it all the time. I think even Braun Strowman is kind of like that right now, where he got pulled from that Royal Rumble match with Lesnar, and ever since then, he's really been doing nothing. That horrendous program he had with the Saturday Night Live guys, that was just a joke, and it really sucks, because that's my girlfriend's favorite wrestler, Braun Strowman, and even she has said, like, okay, well, it's kind of like the same thing, you know, he's going to come out and be the big, mean, angry guy, but he's not really going to do anything of consequence. Like, I love Braun. I think he's a great character, but how many times do I want to see him chase Sami Zayn around the arena? You know, how many times do I want him to see him, like, throw a mid-card guy like EC3 through the stage? I want to see him, even if it's just win the U.S. title, tag up with Finn Balor. Obviously, Balor's on SmackDown now with the IC title, but tag up with Balor and have a program with the Revival. Just anything that has some actual, like, story behind it and some thoughtfulness behind it, and not just, you know, him march out and destroy someone who doesn't have a lot of credibility. I thought they were maybe going to go down that road with Samoa Joe on SmackDown after WrestleMania, and that just never materialized. I don't know. It's just a lot of guys that, like, it's just like they like them for a second, and then they're just like, okay, well, we're done with you now, and you're just going to be thrown to obscurity.
I mean, like, we're pointing these out, but it can't be just singled out to one person, one woman. We're giving examples here of several individuals that have a lot of potential, and WWE, just for whatever reason, is in the start-stop mode, and just it doesn't do anybody any favors, and it actually decredits and devalues that individual's brand and that individual's character, because it's like, what are they, fish, are they fowl, are they doing this, are they not, like, what, I don't know what's happening. And nobody, I think, is a better example, as you just mentioned, than Braun Strowman, who, you talk about a fall from grace. I mean, from the Royal Rumble being put in a championship match to, nope, I'm going to be a angry giant, I'm going to flip Vince McMahon's limo, or destroy it rather, and I think that Braun Strowman is a victim of being a one-dimensional character that was never allowed to, or maybe they were too afraid to diversify what he can be about, other than just this big, bad, mean guy that talks like this, and he comes out and destroys things. Like, he's very one-dimensional. I think that doesn't help. And also, he's kind of acting like the heel without being booked as such. What I mean by that is, look what he did with Kevin Owens when he was bullying around Kevin Owens for absolutely no reason. He's doing the same thing with Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn ever do to Braun Strowman? Nothing. So there's just no reason for him doing what he's doing. He's flapping out there in the wind. He still gets a decent reaction on Raw, but nowhere where it could have been had he at least had a formidable championship run.
Yeah, well, that's it. It's just always more the same. He doesn't really ever say anything unless it's get these hands or just something along those lines. And I just think that they need to give him, like, an actual storyline. You know, the Big Show had some good, like, formidable storylines back in the day where he wasn't just supposed to be a pissed off giant for no reason. And I think Braun can do that if they actually, you know, like, just take the leash off of him a bit. Like, look at Baron Corbin. When Corbin first came up, I thought he was kind of like that, kind of one-dimensional when he was on SmackDown and he had the whole biker look going on. But now look at him. He's probably one of the most – I think he's the most hated heel on the roster right now. And because they gave him a leash, they made his character multi-dimensional. He wasn't just like a big heel guy who would underhand attack guys. They gave him the mic, and he's done really well. And I actually thought that the whole Constable thing was going to hurt him. But he's really taken that ball and run with it. And I think that they're really behind him as far as management goes and giving him a push. And that was because they gave him another type of role where he could talk and show off another version of his character. So I don't know why they wouldn't do that with a guy like Braun Strowman.
I don't know either. And yeah, they clearly are looking at Baron Corbin as in high regards. I mean, he's in the main event of every other Raw, and sometimes it's like, well, why? Like, what who's he with right now? What program is he in? Why is he just being tagged with Bobby Lashley? And sometimes he does get a little bit of that go away heat, because he hasn't changed his outfit since he was the Monday Night Raw manager. He is still in that, like, after prom, you know, I took my jacket off, but I still got my vest on. Like, look, I mean, that can't be comfortable to wrestle in. You can't tell me that that is the best possible attire to wear that will allow you to maximize your ability inside the ring. I mean, you just can't. But he has that look. He's established that as part of his character and brand, so I understand why he's still wearing it. And he gets really big heat reactions on Raw. And so credit to him, credit to WWE for it. But you know, part of this too, I mean, look at Sami Zayn. I mean, I know I just talked about Braun Strowman and Sami Zayn, but Sami Zayn, I think when he came back, was on a really good run. I mean, for the first few weeks, he was cutting really good promos. He's the critic of the critics, you know, having all the crowd sing along to his music and then just basically kicking them in the face and saying we're all critics, which is ironic that he's the critic of the critics, because I think a lot of it is management speaking through Sami Zayn on Raw, responding to all of the criticism that they receive on social media through Sami Zayn as kind of the conduit. And so, I mean, at least that's how I view it. And Sami Zayn has been really cutting great promos. And I'm like, all right, so somebody's going to come out and interrupt him to start a program where Sami Zayn eventually is going to be, you know, persevere, and he's just going to continue and continue and continue until he runs into a heel that is finally going to shut him up. But instead, we get Braun Strowman inexplicably coming out and just chasing him down as Sami Zayn runs like a child on a playground running from a bully, and then just ends up getting pinned clean. How many times? And it gets hung up to dry on the Money in the Bank ladder match or Money in the Bank pay-per-view. He doesn't get a chance in the Money Bank ladder match. We all assume it was Brock Lesnar who did that. But the point is that they did all this great work with him being the critic of the critics, which I think is a very solid character to have. And then they just pour a huge bucket of cold water on it by having Braun Strowman come out weekly and just demolish this guy. So I don't understand. Like, this whole start-stop thing is, I think, a industry or WWE-wide issue.
Yeah, well, it's just there's just some guys that, like, you think that this is going to be their push and then just dies. Like, have you seen the Intercontinental Championship since it went to SmackDown? Nope. Because I don't know if you caught it, Finn didn't even wear it to the ring at Money in the Bank. And I've always hated when they put champions in matches for other titles. Okay, I know that I know that the Money in the Bank isn't a title match. But, like, we all know that Finn's not going to win that. And I hate going into a match saying, like, okay, well, they're definitely not going to put it on him. But, yeah, it's just weird. Like, Balor goes to SmackDown, which I thought was going to be really cool. And I like the whole title switching brands thing. I've barely seen him since then. They were going to give a push to Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins by winning the tag team titles. But where have they been? You know, they put the tag team titles on these guys, effectively pushing them. But then the whole tag team scene on Raw has been between the Usos and the Revival. And the Usos are busy fighting the SmackDown tag team titles. So it's very confusing, because back in the day, you know, like I brought up the Ruthless Aggression era. Like, one of the most mega pushes ever was JBL. And I don't know if you remember that. He basically went from tag team guy to WWE champion and biggest heel on SmackDown in a matter of months. Mm-hmm. And now it's like they start that push, like Sami Zayn, week in, week out, playing the same promo, and then it just dies in the cradle before he does anything of significance. When back in the day, people sometimes would be like, okay, well, why are they pushing Bradshaw? Like, what's his JBL look? But then they fully commit, and then JBL actually got over and had massive heat. So, yeah, I don't understand. I don't understand why they invest like weeks with a certain guy and then they just pull the plug so fast.
I think it just speaks to Vince McMahon's just indecisiveness that is just running rampant in reports from backstage. That, I mean, how many times can you hear talent get frustrated with the creative of, like, so are we doing this? Are we not? Vince McMahon likes this one day, doesn't like it the next. I think there's too many creative people on the staff. I think he needs to cut it down to just a few. When there's too many cooks in the kitchen, I mean, you're not going to get a good product when there's too many ideas floating out there and 4,000 ways to go and people talking in your ear, trying to convince you to go this way, that way. And on top of Vince McMahon being indecisive in and of himself. And you just mentioned JBL. I think as much as I don't tend to like him as a person from everything that I've heard and what he's done backstage, being a bully and hazing people, and which I totally believe that he would do, as a character, he exploded onto the scene against Eddie Guerrero, I believe was his first feud that he had. And when he turned into that guy who was the billionaire that made all this money, he's a guy in Wall Street, he could cut he was one of the best talkers in WWE, and you had no idea. And he comes out in the cowboy hat and the suit, attacks Eddie Guerrero, beat him in a, I think it was a Texas bull rope match that he ended up beating him in. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. This SOB just beat Eddie Guerrero. And I mean, in some of the matches he had, he was the longest running SmackDown champion. I remember he had a match with Big Show in a steel cage for the Undisputed Championship at the time, and he ended up chokeslamming JBL through the ring, and JBL was able to escape underneath the ring. I mean, they came up with some really good ways for him to remain champion, and just when you think he's finally going to lose, he doesn't. And so, yeah, that him, JBL was a perfect example of when you fully commit to somebody that you think may be able to take the place of a top heel, or even babyface for that matter, just go for it. If it fails, it fails, but you can't be half pregnant. Either you're going to be pregnant or you're not. Like, you can't just half-ass this project. And that's what they're doing with so many talent. It's like they get really talked into it one week, and then somebody else talks them out of it the next, and Vince McMahon continues to go with it. So it's frustrating to watch. It's frustrating as a viewer. I'm sure it's frustrating for the talent, and it's just not good for the product overall when you just kind of like, I'm here, I'm there, I'm over here, like being omnipresent, like, well, I'm over here and here and here and here, but I'm never really in one place at one time all the time. And so it becomes frustrating from a storyline perspective, from a viewership perspective, and absolutely, I'm sure the talent backstage are frustrated as well.
Well, yeah, that's the whole thing. And another thing that is frustrating, well, I feel like we've kind of branched off on a bit of a negative spin, but I found that this week was really aggravating for me to watch, because I slowly realized I brought up the whole United States Championship thing and how the Intercontinental Championship has been non-existent. I feel as though, like, when you get a title now, the creative's mind behind it is like, okay, well, we put the title on them, so we don't have to give them much creative work because people just know they're established. Like, not for anything, but Roman Reigns is just always on TV. And now that he's on SmackDown, but he's actually on both, and it's just always the same thing. It's always Roman Reigns, and now kind of Shane McMahon. I really like Shane McMahon, but again, it's diluting it. But then, meanwhile, you have Rey Mysterio win the U.S. title, and then he's not on Raw, and now we don't even know what's up with the U.S. title. Finn Balor's the Intercontinental Champion. We never see him. And even Seth Rollins, like, when's the last, okay, he had the tag team match on Raw, but, like, a few weeks in that feud with AJ Styles, like, I felt that they really rushed into that feud, and it was just, it was lackluster to me. But, yeah, I just felt like a lot of the creative nowadays, as I mentioned with the tag team titles, neither tag team champions on Raw or SmackDown were on the product this week, I believe. So it just feels like, okay, well, we'll put the title on this guy, but then we can neglect him creatively because people just know that he's credible because he has a belt.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, I mean, when you have championships in any sport, even in this fictitious era or in environment of WWE, if you don't make that the focal point of the show, well, then what the hell is everyone doing here? I mean, Stone Cold has said this 100 times, that if you're not here to win a championship and be the top guy, well, what are you doing here? And when the product itself and the production, the TV production and the creative – don't align with that thinking, it just becomes about, well, who's the biggest star, perceived star, and right now it's all about Roman Reigns, yet he doesn't have a championship. Right now, I want to be looking at the champions that struggled, and I want to hear about their journey to get to the top. I mean, yeah, we went to WrestleMania with them, we saw them get there, we all were, you know, especially with Kofi Kingston, who I think is one of the best stories of 2018-2019. I want to focus on the championship and not just always think in the back of my mind, they're doing this to appease the fans for another month, and then they're going to take the belts off them, and it's going to be all about Roman Reigns again. Like, I always somehow think in the back of my mind that all roads lead to Roman Reigns, regardless of if he has a belt or not. It just is when you're on, you could be off on a side street, but you know eventually you're going to get back on the freeway that ends up being all roads lead to Roman Reigns and lead to Roman Reigns as champion and everybody cheering him. Like, that is all I can think about, regardless of who's champion. It's just kind of, you know, management sitting in the back going, yeah, this is a nice cute distraction for now, but we all know, you know, in 4 months, we wait till you see what we do with Roman, wait till you see what we do with Roman. Like, that just seems to, I just get that feeling and I can't shake it.
Well, yeah, and I like what you said about the championships, about how they should be the focal point. Like I mentioned when we were off the air talking, like, I grew up with the Ruthless Aggression era. There was a point where Evolution held every title on Raw. Batista and Ric Flair had the tag team titles. Orton had the Intercontinental. Triple H had the World Heavyweight. On SmackDown, you know, JBL had the WWE Championship. Orlando Jordan beat Cena for the U.S. title. He had the Basham brothers as his goons for a bit. And it was just like, okay, like, all these guys, like, have the belts. And it kind of felt that all the belts used to intertwine one day, like, a lot of the times. Like, the tag team champions would sometimes fight the Intercontinental champion and the WWE champion, just to say. But yeah, and now it's like, okay, well, Roman Reigns doesn't have the belt, so you can't be mad at us for pushing Roman Reigns. Well, he gets more screen time than anyone else on Raw and SmackDown. So you're just devaluing the titles because, well, now that you're champion, you get less screen time. Like, I felt like I saw Finn Balor way more when he was not Intercontinental Champion. I don't know how you feel about that, but I feel like ever since he won that Intercontinental Championship, I've barely seen him.
He's been, yeah, I mean, I don't want to say non-existent, but pretty damn close to non-existent. And he's got one of the most prestigious, longest running and most prestigious lineage of any of the championships outside of the WWE championship in the entire company. And yet he is kind of an absentee champion, not because he's choosing to be, but because creative has really nothing for him at this time. As you just said, it's kind of like, well, he's champion, so you should all be happy, right? But we're just going to kind of let him, you know, settle here for a while and we'll get back to him when we can. And that's the way it feels. I don't want to feel that way with a talent like Finn Balor. And so, all right, well, let me try to recalibrate things here.
We kind of spun off there.
But that's what happens with wrestling. And again, this is not something that I'm hating on WWE. We're not hating on WWE. This is just these things that could easily be improved, which would help the product. So, I mean, everyone's like, oh, y'all complain. No. This is because we love the product and we're pointing out how it can be at least improved in a way that would benefit all viewers. So, all right, let's talk about Bray Wyatt, and then we can close it out. Or if you have other things we can discuss. Bray Wyatt, what are your thoughts on the Firefly Funhouse?
Oh, I love it. I love it. I think it's great. I remember that you had mentioned on a show that you wanted Bray Wyatt to, like, come back as, like, a breath of fresh air to his character, and this is just, it's great. I think everyone knew that Bray Wyatt was a great guy at embracing his character, but you could tell he's all in on this, and this is like some twisted stuff that I don't know if we've seen since the Ministry of Darkness days, but I love it. My girlfriend loves it. I've heard that you really like it, and I'm just really anxious to see where they go with this. And I just hope that it's not him just attacking lower card guys like Apollo Crews, and that he just gets right in there with the major faces. Like, I hope it's like a Seth Rollins or a Kofi Kingston or just something like that, because I hope they don't waste it on a lower card feud, because I think this has the potential to be one of the biggest things of 2019.
It could be. I mean, if you listen to me, I mean, you know how where I stand on this, and I'm loving it. My concern, and if you guys listen to me, not just my co-host, but if anybody's listening to me, you guys know that my concern is that the translation from vignettes and backstage promos and videos and pre-taped segments is how does this translate into the ring? I mean, regardless of whether he's working with the top talent or mid or lower card, which is, I mean, I'm on board for mid and upper card. I think that's where he should go. It needs to be a huge impact. It can't just be kind of like, well, let me work my way up. He's not a new guy. He's been around the horn. So my concern is, though, how does this translate to the ring? Does he come out in his sweater vest and somebody provokes him and he turns into this scary clown face, kind of a quasi circus scary clown from American Horror Story look? I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's the thing I'm concerned about. I mean, I'm excited, but I'm also a little reserved in how WWE is going to present this character for Bray Wyatt. But I loved it. Even from week one, when people are crapping all over it, saying, oh my God, what is this? Makes no sense. You know what? It doesn't. I'd rather have something that made no sense. If he even stayed as that character and he didn't show us the dark secret he had, if he was just in that sweater vest and he wasn't getting to that dark part yet, I would still be on board with this, because anything was better than what he was doing week after week after week after week, where it just, I'm not even paying attention to him anymore. Like, if he had transitioned to this guy in the sweater vest, I would still even be okay with that. So, yeah, it's going super dark. They are pushing the limits of PG on this whole character, and that's, I love it. Yeah, there's kids involved with it, but everyone needs to relax, okay? I'm sure that these kids are were all signed off on by their parents. I'm sure it's all legally fine for everyone. That's all soft and PG in this thing. I love how he says, all you need to do is let me in. That clown mask is legitimately scary. It doesn't look like he went to, you know, Spirit Halloween down the street and picked up a $10 mask the week before Halloween. Like, it was designed by one of the greatest, I don't know his name, costume designers in Hollywood, who also did Leatherface and all that stuff. So this was designed and created by a professional, and it sure looks that way. Like, I'm loving the mask, and when he did Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, like the whole production, video production of it, has also got to be commended. Not just Bray Wyatt, but the production team. Apparently this was Bray Wyatt's brainchild as well. Like, this was something he came up with and he brought to life. So while the production team has done a great job, Bray.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Wyatt has to be commended for coming up with this and basically saving his career.
Well, yeah, I didn't know that it was his brainchild, and it makes sense, because I remember in one of your earlier shows when this first started that you said that you thought the best part about it was how invested in it he was and how he gave it his all from the beginning. But you brought up a good point. I never really thought about how they might translate it into the ring, and yeah, I really hope they don't ruin it, because you kind of get caught up with these vignettes where you're just like, you almost think it's a movie and you're kind of waiting for, like, you know, the next step of the movie to come out. But no, he's a wrestler. And I do think that they have to make sure that it doesn't just kind of flop and it becomes overly PG. That's my worry, is that once he actually gets in the ring, it's going to kind of lose the ambiance about it. But no, I think I like that they're taking it slow. I'm actually happy that he didn't come out at Money in the Bank, because when Sami Zayn was kind of suspended there, I thought, okay, it's for sure Bray Wyatt. But I like how they're really dragging this out. And I just hope that, as you mentioned, he just makes an impact. And because I've always been a Bray Wyatt fan, going back to his old character, and I really liked it when they made him win the title at Elimination Chamber, and then it just kind of flopped right out of the gate after that horrible House of Horrors match. But yeah, I have high hopes for this. I just hope they really capitalize on it.
That's the key now, is execution, and they need to be very careful. I hope Bray Wyatt is very closely invested in how this is going to translate inside of the ring, because that's the next step. As you said, like, I mean, this is a segment I look forward to every single week. Like, I want to hear that that theme music. Like, every time I hear that theme music, I'm like, yes, here we go. Like, you know, I love it. Like, it's very entertaining right now. I'm invested in what he's doing. I love how dark it is, yet innocent at the same time. Like, it's a very dark innocence, and he says he's learned to hone that darkness and control it. Well, how does he control it? When does he bring it out? The fact that he's telling us he can control it tells me he's not always going to be that character. Maybe it's kind of a way that is done with Finn Balor and his demon character. What I want, though, is if in fact it's going to be presented in a similar fashion, where he's kind of this nice guy in a sweater vest, but when provoked, he's that evil clown or whatever you want to call it at this point. I need a reason for it. I don't just want him to just indiscriminately, like WWE does, say that, oh, the demon Finn Balor is going to face so-and-so at Super Showdown. Well, why? I want it to be a reason and special and make sense to bring out that dark side. Don't just bring it out because it's a pay-per-view. Like, make it special, if that's how they're going to present it. So we'll have to see. But I know we're running over here a little bit, but is there any other topics that you want to discuss from this week? There's a lot we didn't touch on, but we'd be here for 6 hours. anything else that you wanted to touch on?
I was pretty happy to see Triple H kind of have another role in it. I'm a sucker for nostalgia, so I like it whenever Triple H is on TV. But the only critique I have, and I know I've done a lot of this on this show, is that I'm kind of wondering who's exactly in charge. Because Shane McMahon comes out every week. Now he's fighting on SmackDown sometimes. And he's fighting, it seems like, at every pay-per-view nowadays. And he's just like, well, I'm your boss, and I'm your boss. And he's getting all of, like, McIntyre to be his crony, and Lashley and Elias, and I'm just kind of waiting, like, okay, well, is Shane McMahon just the general manager of both shows? I know they said that, like, the McMahons have taken over both shows, but I just want to look for some sort of stability. You know, Triple H makes an appearance and makes a match for Kofi Kingston and Seth Rollins to fight Corbin and Lashley, and maybe I'm old school. I like the days where, like, you had Bischoff running Raw and, let's say, Teddy Long running SmackDown, and they were, like, the buck stopped with them unless Vince showed up. But now it's just like, okay, well, Shane is the boss until Triple H comes in, but, like, who gets the final word between them? Like, Shane used to be commissioner of SmackDown, and Stephanie used to be commissioner of Raw. Well, what's their titles now? And Triple H's face while the rest of the McMahons are heels? It's just, and they somehow never cross paths. Just for that, it's kind of got me, like, a bit confused from that perspective.
Yeah, I don't know where any of this stands, and again, maybe the critique part of it is just like, I don't know, maybe I'm contagious with the critiques, I don't know, but I think that, yeah, like, I understand that the heel authority figure has certainly run its course. I mean, we've seen heel authority figures for, it seems like, almost forever. I loved Eric Bischoff. I think he was one of the best general managers ever. He was just so well suited for that position. Teddy Long, I think, is up there as well. And yeah, like, I don't know who's in charge. Like, Shane McMahon comes out on Raw, yet he was in charge of SmackDown and says, I'm your boss. Well, this is a different show, so are you my boss on this show, or just, like, all across shows, or just on SmackDown, but you're the McMahon? So, like, it's not clear cut. And I think that they're making it purposely as such because they don't want to tie their own hands if they need to conveniently change the storyline to something else. So I think this is intentional, that they're leaving it very ambiguous, that they're just saying, well, basically, if you're a McMahon, you can go on either show and you're the boss of everybody. But yeah, like you said, like, well, so who's overrunning who? Is Stephanie briefly turned face before Shane did, but Vince is also a heel, and Triple H is wearing 14 hats, being the NXT godfather, but also being a part of DX, and also being an authority figure on Raw and SmackDown when it's convenient. So Triple H is all
And if I could cut in for 1 second, now he's fighting Randy Orton at Super Showdown.
Yep, or he wants to be the game, or Paul Levesque. I mean, I don't. He wears so many hats. You have no idea who and what he's going to be from day to day. So I have no clue. I just, when I see McMahon out there, I'm just thinking, okay, well, they're going to try to screw over whoever they are now speaking with. I mean, I don't know who's in charge. I don't think we're just supposed to go. Just if you have McMahon in your name, you're in charge. I mean, that's just what I'm going to go with, because otherwise I'm going to get very frustrated and confused. So, yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, so that's about it. And I just think, as you said, it's kind of run its course. Like, I know that Vince is probably the best heel of all time, but I liked it on those rare occasions where Vince would come out and actually be a face. And, like, everyone and would swerve everyone in a good way. And now it just seems like it's just kind of getting a bit redundant. And like I said, I love Shane McMahon. I've always loved Shane McMahon. I think that he's always entertaining, and he's a good athlete as well. But again, it's kind of diluting it, where he's coming out on Raw and on SmackDown and having, he has about two or three segments per show. And I'm just like, well, it's getting old really fast. Like, what other wrestler had two, like, main feuds going on at the same time? And it feels like he's been feuding with Miz and Roman for, like, the last 3 weeks or so.
And not even just, you know, and beyond the heel authority figure that has run its course, is the fact that, and I've brought this up, I feel like I'm a broken record, but that we're all supposed to believe that Shane McMahon is on equal footing with the ability and of these world-class athletes that have been supposedly training to be here and have dedicated their lives to being in WWE, and you have this son of the promoter who decides to play in the sandbox a few months out of the year and gets to just go toe-to-toe with whoever he wants, and we're supposed to believe that that is a legitimate threat, is Shane McMahon. I mean, the guy is in great shape. I'm not denying that for his age, but the fact that he can go toe-to-toe and it's always even Steven in any match that he has is just ridiculous nonsense. I mean, yeah, The Miz is not in as good shape. I don't think he's in as good shape as Shane. Shane trains his ass off. That's not the point. The point is that Shane McMahon, he is not technically an active competitor, superstar, whatever you want to label it, in WWE. He's kind of just an attraction. That's not to say that he can't take great bumps. We all know the bumps he can take. We all know the risks he takes. That doesn't make you a great performer. What makes you a great performer is putting your dues, paying your dues day in, day out, years going into NXT, going through developmental, or maybe even the independents, come into NXT and then making it to the main roster, and you have Shane McMahon who's just, well, I kind of have a birthright to be here. And I think that's the problem. I mean, I'm a Shane O'Mac fan. Let's not get this wrong. I like Shane McMahon. I think he's much better suited as a heel, so I applaud WWE for making him a heel, because that's where I think he should be, after especially winning that trophy at the well-liked and critically acclaimed Crown Jewel pay-per-view from last year. You have Shane McMahon win that trophy, and I said right then and there, I said they should turn him heel, because he could live on that moniker that he's the best in the world, because that's what the trophy was for. And that's exactly what they did, although a few months later. So I love him as a heel. It's just not believable when you have him in there taking these shots and getting slammed into cages. He doesn't even sell it coming on in SmackDown. Like, he just comes out like he was just, you know, napping all weekend. I mean, there's no selling with him, and really, I think that's kind of a company-wide thing too, but there was just, I mean, you got to be kidding me. That the worst to me was AJ Styles and The Undertaker when he went toe-to-toe with those two individuals in the past few WrestleManias. Just come on, AJ Styles and The Undertaker, and I'm supposed to believe that Shane McMahon is any kind of threat to these two? It just takes me out of the moment with those things.
Well, yeah, I remember back in the day, one of my favorite Monday Night Raw main events of all time is during the invasion angle, he fought The Rock in a street fight. And it was almost comedic, because it was just The Rock beating him around the arena, you know, putting a trash can over him and smack him with a chair and then kick him down the ramp, or when he had the handicap ladder match with Vince versus Steve Austin for control of WWE. And it was just Vince, like, whooping them both around. Like, yeah, I think one feud, his best feud ever, I think, was probably his feud with Kane in 2003. And that was really well done. But even in that, like, he never beat Kane. He never beat Kane clean once. And I remember he had his balls electrocuted.
Yeah. With a car battery.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And But, yeah, I just think they have to be a bit more realistic with Shane as far as that goes. You know, if he is going to win a match, have him have maybe like a henchman of sorts, like McIntyre now. But like you said, when he went toe-to-toe with AJ Styles, I got to say it was a heck of a match. Got to give it to them. But again, like I was supposed to believe that that was even remotely possible that he could win, as you mentioned.
That's not the problem. I don't think the quality of his matches are the problem, because he does have some skill inside the ring. I don't think I'm disputing that. He's nowhere near the ability of AJ Styles. I mean, when you're working with a talent that good, they always make their opponents look good as well. So we always, you know, you got to give AJ Styles credit for making Shane look good. But that match was good. The problem is it's Shane McMahon. That's the problem, that I'm supposed to believe that Shane McMahon can do this. It's not necessarily the quality of the matches. It's that it's Shane who's able to do this. And he just comes off the street from Asia or wherever he was from when he interrupted the Vincent Kennedy McMahon Award when Vince was awarding it to Stephanie. And it was in Boston, and the place went berserk. And it was awesome to see Shane back. He gets put in a Hell in a Cell with The Undertaker inexplicably. I mean, there's no explanation as to why Vince McMahon did that. And he went toe-to-toe with The Undertaker. He comes off the street and does this? Really? I don't know. So it's that kind of stuff that just is hard to get past, regardless of the fact that he has good matches and regardless of the fact that I'm a Shane O'Mac fan. It's that kind of stuff that it's like, really? Like, I don't mind if he should get his ass kicked for 75% of the match. Instead, it's 50-50, and I think that's my problem. So that's my deal with Shane.
Yeah, and just one thing. When he came back, I said this even before he came back, like, if he comes back, he has to fight Triple H or have some form of a program. And I think they've been on the screen together at the same time, maybe twice. And I just felt like that was a program that would write itself almost, even if it was just Triple H whooping his ass, like, in a match that culminated. I never understood why they didn't just go with that match. It just seemed like it was a story that you didn't even have to tell the story. They have beef over control of the company, and people will be like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But as you mentioned, he comes back and fights The Undertaker for no apparent reason. Yeah, that always I found weird that they never went down that road.
Yeah, maybe they still could. I mean, Shane McMahon seems to be taking on multiple feuds now. I could see it happening maybe at a WrestleMania. Definitely. I mean, considering I assume Triple H is mostly a babyface, at least five out of the six characters I think are babyface for him right now. And Shane McMahon is now a heel. If they continue that, I mean, there's something there. Maybe they bump into each other backstage. They have a heated argument, plant the seeds for it. I mean, they could go that road. And I think it could be a decent match. Like you said, though, the story doesn't really need to be fleshed out that much. We all know the backstory of who and what these two guys are. And you could dig from decades ago with these two of footage that would basically write itself, as you said. So, all right. So if any other things before we close out the show?
No, I think we covered a lot, even if we didn't get to everything about this week. I think we really went to all corners there.
I know, it's funny. It's just wrestling provides so much content and so many opinions and so many ways to go. I mean, that's what's great about this. And I know we basically touched on like 20% of what happened this week, but that's fine because, you know, wrestling is just that's the nature of the beast. So, Anthony, before you go, just let everyone know where they can find you on social media.
Well, my Twitter handle is @ADeMarco25. If you plan on following me, I really hope you like hockey, because I work in the media business for hockey, and it's about 95% of my timeline. But obviously, I'm a huge wrestling fan, and ever since I connected with you, Matt, I've been way more active about it on social media as well. So yeah, that's where you can find me on Twitter.
That's awesome. Well, I'm glad I could get you back into it. And even though, you know, hockey may not be the most popular sport in the United States, like let me tell you something, though. When the NHL playoffs come around, we all get engaged. I mean, like, that's just the nature of it. And so I know I'll be getting engaged in that. And it's a fun time to be a hockey fan, and you're hitting it at the right time.
Yeah, exactly. I've obviously, I'm from Montreal. We live, breathe, and we'll die
Canadians.
For hockey. Exactly. Canadians, eh? But,
yeah. but definitely, yeah. Got the accent, so yeah.
Exactly. There you go.
All right. Well, Anthony, it's been a blast, and we'll definitely have to do this again.
Awesome, man. Thanks a lot.
All right. Take care.